In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman. Wonder Woman. Batman. Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me this episode is my super friend and better half of the Fire and Water Podcast Network's own JLUcast, Cindy Franklin. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. I'm happy to have you here in the Hall of Justice.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you guys have been to, like, that building a lot, right? They're the actual building mm-hmm. that the Hall of Justice is based on is not that far from where you guys are.
Well, Union Terminal is located in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it used to be a bus train station. And they it is a gorgeous building. They have a natural history museum in there. I think there's three or four different museums that they've got located in there. And it's probably about an hour and 20 minutes away from us. So
okay. How do they not have, like, a little thing about the Super Friends in that building?
I mean, right? Oh, they do.
They do. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have a whole thing that's dedicated to Kenner that's right there.
Good.
And it's a permanent exhibit. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Okay, that's good. Because it's like, you know, there it is. I mean, gee, if I was ever in that part of town, I'd be like, I have to get a picture of myself in front of the Hall of Justice for people.
Oh, yeah. But, and, you know, like I said, it's not too far. And then Chris and I have talked about going up to see the superhero museum that's in Indiana, and it's probably about 6 hours away from us. And we talked about going this summer, but we can't get his work schedule and my work schedule to align because it's just far enough away that we'd have to spend the night.
Sure. Right. Yeah. You're not going to do 12 hours worth of driving in one day.
No.
So, all right. Well, very cool. Well, again, I'm happy to have you here. We're here to talk about Super Friends number 19. Before we go any further, we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of For All Mankind is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Cindy, what do you got?
All righty. So my choice from InStock Trades is The Art of Ramona Fraiden. It is a hardcover book. And what's really cool about this is it is actually only $20.99 right now. So you save over 30%. And I don't know about anybody else, but this, my birthday's in September. It better be there. There's my subtle hint for the day.
Okay. Yeah, you can't go wrong with the Art of Ramona Fraiden book. That's a great book. I have it. It's a really wonderful edition. So, yeah, absolutely go pick that up, everybody. My choice for InStock Trades is Super Friends Saturday Morning Cartoon Hardcover Volume 1. This is a hardcover collection collecting Super Friends numbers of 1 through 26, 26 comics, plus the limited collector's edition C41 and C46, plus the ultra-rare Aqua Tears meets the Super Friends number 1 tie-in sort of giveaway comic. It's, of course, by E. Nelson Bridwell and Ramona Fraiden. The cover is by Alex Toth with a Superman redrawn face by Murphy Anderson. The price is – normal price is $69.99, but the trades price is only $40.59. You save 42%. So these are both really great deals. You can find them both on InStockTrades.com. So for these and all the other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. Cindy, since this is your first episode, like, what is your history with this cartoon series or the specifically the comic book?
So I have always loved comic books. I have read comic books since I was little. My mother actually worked at Begley Drug when probably for 36 years, I think. So from the time I was 3 until I was up in my 40s, she worked at Begley Drug. And that later became Rite Aid, which is now Walgreens. But I would go out there with her when, you know, she couldn't find a babysitter or I was waiting for my dad to get off work. And I would set my little butt down by the corner because they had the comic books in the back corner of the store. And I would sit down there and the manager didn't care. And I would read all the comic books on the shelf. And, you know, so that's where I got to read a lot of my comic books. And that's the reason I know about a lot of different comic books, because I read everything that was there. I've always been a vicarious reader. And so, you know, picking up any little thing that was there, I read about. So Chris is like, how do you know about Captain America and Diamondback? I said, it was on the shelf. How do you know about this? It was on the shelf. And so, how do you know about Red Sonja? It was on the shelf.
On the shelf. So, there you go. So you saw no difference?
Super Friends, of course. You know, you had to read Super Friends because, you know, Super Friends comics. You know, that's how you spent Saturday mornings. And my dad loved comics, too. He and I would always sit and watch Wonder Woman and the Hulk and do that. You know, that was a whole thing that he watched with me. I think he had different reasons for watching Wonder Woman than I did, though.
Probably. So, when, as a kid, you saw, first of all, that's very atypical because most kids got kicked out of stores for just reading comics and not buying any of them. That was, you had a very atypical experience there.
Well, it also helps that when I was little, I was adorable. So, you know, you know, it's like, oh, she's cute. She, you know, and I was very quiet, so I didn't bother anything. And I was this adorable little kid. So they're like, oh, she's cute. We'll just set her back here. So,
all right, fair enough. Now, when you were a kid, though, you saw no difference in your mind between whatever comics you were reading, like Super Friends or Red Sonja or Captain America. Like, it was all just comic books to you, right? You didn't make a discernment between, like, oh, this is Richie Rich. This is, like, a little kid's comic. You didn't care?
It was one of those things. As long as I was reading something, I was happy. You know, I was like, okay, today I'm going to go to the Super Friends world. And today, this, you know, now I'm going to go to see Red Sonja and kick some butt and, you know, that kind of thing. So
that's I'm trying to picture a little kid reading Red Sonja in 1970s because that was.
Excuse me, I was 80s? Born in 75. Yeah, let's try 80s there, buddy.
sorry. I didn't mean to add 5 years to your age. I apologize.
Yes, so, I mean, come on.
So, all right. So let's hear to talk about. Let's do this awkward transition. Let's talk about Super Friends number 19. The story is called "The Mystery of the Missing Monkey." It is by E. Nelson Bridwell, one of his best titles. Ramona Fraiden and Bob Smith. It was on sale January 25th, 1979.
Mm-hmm.
It opens up with Aquaman putting the Wonder Twins through a training session involving what to do if a shark approaches. Xana and Jaina handle themselves well, and then Batman arrives to pick them up. At the Hall of Justice, the twins wonder where Gleek is. Jaina, taking the form of a bloodhound, uses her heightened sense of smell to follow the trail. She's able to determine that Gleek got in a car, but she doesn't know which one. The Super Friends convene, and Batman suspects this is the work of their old foe, the Menagerie Man. We then see that Batman is indeed correct. The Menagerie Man has Gleek in a cell. Later that evening at the Hall of Justice, the Trouble Alert goes off, saying that there was a ruckus at the Kangaroo Disco involving real kangaroos. These kangaroos are so powerful and wild, they practically destroy the place, and some of them make like the Earth 2 Superman and jump high into the air, eluding capture from the Super Friends. Meanwhile, we see that the Menagerie Man has trained Gleek to use his tail to become a superb pickpocket, rewarded with a bunch of bananas. The next day, at the Gotham Auto Show, the Super Friends lay in wait for the Menagerie Man to show up. As expected, he does, planning to rob the patrons. The Super Friends have a tough time keeping the beast under control while Gleek goes on his pickpocketing mission, but is stopped by an unknown person. At the Menagerie Man's hideout, he inspects the stolen loot. It all looks good, except why are the stolen diamonds wet? Suddenly, the diamonds begin to talk, and Gleek changes into a gorilla. The diamonds then turn into smog, confusing the Menagerie Man long enough for the gorilla, a.k.a. Jaina, of course, to apprehend him. The Menagerie Man, now no longer a threat, the Super Friends go back to the Hall of Justice and notice that Gleek has managed to pilfer Superman's civilian clothes, Wonder Woman's magic lasso, and the dynamic duo's utility belts. As Gleek demands bananas for his actions, the Wonder Twins realize they have another job ahead of them to teach Gleek to unlearn a trick. All right, so before we get to the plot exactly, let's talk about the cover a little bit. What did you think of this cover by Ramona Fraiden and Bob Smith, Cindy?
It's going to be one that draws you in. It's got the big three. So, you know, that's very
important. Hey.
Mm-hmm.
Big three? Come on.
I'm sorry, Rob, but let's be honest here. It's the big three. And especially Wonder Woman is front and center, which you gotta love.
Yeah.
Now, I do have issue with the tail on the kangaroo, but that's a whole nother anatomy thing. So
that's a very big tail. Right. I just noticed that. That's a huge tail for a kangaroo. Yeah.
And it also kind of gives you the beats of the story. It's got the kangaroo, it's got the cougar, it's got the fire hawk, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have Zan and Jaina there in the corner. So
I think I wish it had been colored a little more vibrantly. Like, I think that kind of dull green in the background doesn't do it a lot of favors. But in terms of the action, yeah, it's great. It's Ramona Freyden was wonderful at fitting a lot in at a tiny space. I kind of look how hapless Batman looks as he's trying to capture that bird with the bag of loot. He just kind of looks sort of pathetic, which I kind of like. I'm used to like Batman being perfect and he knows everything and he's 10 steps ahead of the smartest person. But here he's just kind of like, oh, come on. And the bird's just sort of getting away. I kind of like that. But yeah, and there's no other than the top piece where it says Super Beasts Trained to Steal, a startling new challenge of the Super Friends. It's relatively free of cover copy, which I like. I like
exactly. It's nice and clean.
Just letting the imagery speak for itself. You got Ramona Freyden. What else do you need?
Exactly. She is fabulous.
Yeah. And of course, as you said, Wonder Woman riding a kangaroo is something that we would see a lot in her and in the movies. I mean, that was like they wrote those. They're not kangaroos on Paradise Island, but they're like what, like Kangas or something? I forget what.
Yeah, they're Kangas, and so that's really. I mean, that's actually something that's actually referred to in the story. So.
Oh, right. All right. Okay. So, yeah, it's not bad. Again, I wish maybe a little bit more vibrant colors, but otherwise I do like this cover. So I love the opening, of course, because it starts with Aquaman.
Right.
It's Aquaman something to do. He's teaching Zan and Jaina about what to do, and they're surrounded by these fearsome-looking sharks. Great. Again, classic artwork by Ramona Freyden. And it's just – I've always been afraid. I'm afraid of the water. I don't really know how to swim very well. I can probably get by if I had to, but I'm generally a little afraid of that thing. Maybe that's the reason why I like Aquaman so much. But I love this. I mean, I would want to train with Aquaman. This looks fun. This looks great. Where he's like, don't worry. You know, they're fine. You know, I'm under command of them. I love how fearsome they look, the way Ramona Freyden draws them.
Yes, really. Absolutely. And I mean, this actually makes sense. It's like, okay, this is what I do best, so I'm going to train you here. And think about how using your powers in different environments can help you. So, yeah.
And he said, he talks about, like, you know, I'm teaching you this because I won't always be here. Mm-hmm. So in case you see a shark. And it reminds me of something they probably would have done in a less, you know, less sharky way on the show. It would have done this kind of like training montage or something like that. It's cute. Again, Aquaman is not going to get a lot to do in this issue. So right. I'm happy that that it opens here. And I have to figure that maybe that was E. Nelson Birdwell doing that on purpose. Like, he wrote the story, realized Aquaman doesn't get a lot to do. So he's like, all right, I'll open it with Aquaman.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this is my favorite iteration of Aquaman with the orange shirt and the green tights. I mean, mm-hmm. This is what he should look like to me.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And then so Batman comes to pick them up. I love the little detail. Again, I mention this virtually every episode where Ramona Freyden throws in little bits of detail that are extra effort for her, mm-hmm. but to me are so meaningful in that they're character bits. And I appreciate that she made the extra effort. And specifically in this instance, it's on page 3 where Batman picks them up and you see Aquaman's like, see you tomorrow, kids. And they're driving away. And Jaina is not sitting in the seat. She's like riding on top of it. Like she's riding on the back, like she's in a parade or something.
Yeah.
Like a teenage kid would do. Cause I mean, if I got picked up by the, now, first of all, of course, there's only 2 seats in the Batmobile. So
that's what I was going to say. She kind of has to go somewhere.
Right. But I don't know. Like, you could have just fudged that and have them both just have their tiny little heads. But if I was a kid and I got picked up by the Batmobile, you bet your ass I would have sat there on the back part and waved. It looks awesome.
Yeah, I just like that absolutely. Little
yeah, I just think that's really cool.
So now, then I do have a question about this, and this is just something that just gets me. This is 2 things that get me about this whole thing. Why is Jaina's hair not flat to her head? Does she have a skull formation we're not aware of?
I don't know. She like teases it up, although she's just been in the water. So yeah, I don't know how she.
Well, I mean, even in the water, she's got the little thing.
Yeah. it's like a little shark fin. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe her head is shaped in a funny way because she is from Exor. So I don't know.
This is true. Now, did you miss the part, and this is throughout it, where they just say powers activate instead of Wonder Twin powers activate?
Oh, you're right.
Wonder Twin.
That's right. They don't see it. They just say powers. Okay, interesting. I wonder what. You know, Sid Birdwell's like, ah, it's close enough. It's fine. So, or probably the letter. And they do it again, actually, on page 4. They do the powers activate, where she turns into the Bloodhound.
Yes.
And goes searching for Gleek. So they go again. They go searching for him because they see that Gleek is missing. Then, as I mentioned, the Super Friends get together at the Hall of Justice. Again, another little detail. I love Robin sitting on the desk, which is just, you know, because this is like their hangout. You know,
they're
casual. This is their home. I like all this. And then so Batman immediately assumes that this is the work of the Menagerie Man who we originally saw in issue 6 of Super Friends. So we do see him here. He's trapped Gleek in a cell. And the Menagerie Man is sporting a new costume.
Mm-hmm.
In the first issue that he appeared, he looked more like the Phantom.
Yes.
Bare legs with this purple tunic and then the leopard print. But here he's rocking like a blue tunic and he's still got the leopard, but he's got long pants and these spikes sticking out of his head. I don't know what that exactly is supposed to be.
I don't either.
Now, what do you think? I mean, neither costume is really going to inspire a lot of fear.
No.
But what
well, the first guy looks like he's out of Lazy Town, which was a cartoon. It was a live action deal that was out when I think Danny was little. And I mean, the people had plastic hair and some faces. And, you know, that's what it reminds me of. It's the guy from Lazy Town.
That was the name of the show, Lazy Town?
Yeah, it was supposed to be getting kids physically active. So, you know, you had a new girl move to town and she's like, hey, let's get active. And so, yeah.
So,
it's called Lazy Town. So
that's a great name for a show. So what do you think of what do you compare the costumes? What do you think of this one compared to the other one? Again, neither one is great, but
well, the dry cleaning lost his first costume, and this is what he could find. So.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Yeah, again, neither one is exactly the Joker or anything like that. He's really not. It's just kind of a hodgepodge of stuff.
Exactly. It's just like, oh well, this will work. This will work. And I kept thinking up until this, when they show him, that I thought, okay, they're talking about training them. Oh, they've trained with Aquaman. They're training with Batman. I thought this would be something. I kept waiting for it to be Batman set it all up until they show him. I thought this was going to be a training exercise. Hey, you know, because they started off training and then, you know, this was supposed to be a whole thing. And I'm like, oh, wait, there actually is a villain. Okay.
Actually, well, the Menagerie Man is, he's a villain technically. Again, he's not the most fearsome foe the Super Friends have ever met. So we go to this disco and we see that the kangaroos are causing all sorts of chaos. They're shoving all the stolen jewels into their pouches, which will render them very slimy when they pull them out.
Because that's icky.
Yeah, that thing is icky. If you've ever seen it, like they pull one of their babies out of there, they're all covered in goo and stuff. So the ruse are going crazy. The Wonder Twins do the powers activate. And we see that they are like kind of enhanced animals because one of them leaps away and Superman is like, he can barely hold on to it, which of course he should be able to do. He's Superman for Pete's sakes. And then the other one kicks Jaina in the face as in her gorilla form. And then I love that when Batman and I guess Wonder Woman and Aquaman show up in the Batmobile, the one brew just smashes through the brick wall.
I know. And they never address this, where they got the powers from, how he was able to do this, because it's not like he's super smart, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, in the his previous shtick was that he would reduce them in size and blow them up. That's not what he's doing here. So yeah, you're not sure exactly how they're able to do this. And then later on, they literally fly up on top of a building, and we see them jump away, and they're like, you know, jumping a mile up in the air. And then I love Superman coming out of the disco with the two kangaroos just under his arm. It's this very funny image. You're just like, okay. And then
Robin even says, leaping tall buildings at a single bound. Mm-hmm. They're stealing Superman's thunder.
Exactly. In that panel where Superman shows up, poor Aquaman, because Wonder Woman says, I'm afraid we weren't much help. And he goes, whales and walruses I can handle, but not super kangaroos. Like, oh, come on, Aquaman. You don't need to, you don't need to underscore that you're kind of useless on this mission. You know, you can just, it's okay. So back at the Hall of Justice, again, they talk about this plan and the figure, and the Menagerie Man is, where is he going to strike next? And then we see that he is, in fact, and we see training Gleek to steal. And they get into this whole thing of that Gleek is a Hanna-Barbera anthropomorphic animal who acts a lot more like a human than most animals, but he's still an animal, and so therefore he can be trained to do this thing, i.e. be a pickpocket, and he doesn't realize that's a bad thing, especially when he's getting bananas as a reward.
Right, exactly. And I like to have, I mean, I don't know about you, but especially the way the face is, it's almost like he has a mask over the face in addition to the domino mask. He almost looks like the Question.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because he's got these weird lines on his face, and his nose is kind of oddly drawn. So yeah, it's like he's got some sort of weird mask under the domino mask. Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. It's a very strange look. I do like it, though, I have to say, because it's just weird enough that you're like, all right, what's this about? After they figure out, oh, okay, there's going to be a Gotham auto show at the Coliseum, the Super Friends get there ahead of time, and they lay wait because of the cars are called, like, the Cheetah, the Rhino, and stuff. Now, I noticed there's this establishing panel on page 11 of the Super Friends, and they're all waiting for the Menagerie Man to show up. And we see that Wonder Woman is in the bucket seat of a car. Superman mm-hmm. is standing behind a wall. Batman and Robin are on, like, a riser. And then Aquaman is under a car. This is the literal exact same setup for the previous time the Menagerie Man fought them. Because he showed up at a I think it was like a jewelry exhibit, and the Super Friends did the same thing. They got there early, and they hid. And they just waited for the Menagerie Man to show up. So this is the same trick that Menagerie Man is going to fall for the second time, where nobody seems to notice that, say, Wonder Woman is laying in the backseat of a car.
Well, you know, maybe they were able to get him to, you know, go out. Yeah.
It's just good. He's not the craftiest villain in the world, is all
I mean,
saying.
You know, his fashion choices leave much to be desired. So, you know, maybe that just goes along with it.
Yeah. When I looked at this panel, I went, this feels familiar. Because I reread this issue, and I'm like, wait, I think this is from the other thing. And I looked it up, and yeah, it's the same exact thing. So if you want to get the drop on Menagerie Man, just get to where he is 5 minutes ahead of time and just wait, and then he'll show up. And of course he does. And I love his little chariot that he's got with the MM on it. Like, he really knows how to, like, trick things out.
Yeah.
You know, he makes a big entrance, and he comes in with these lines and these cougars. He blows a little whistle, and the birds attack, and they're carrying flaming torches, which mm-hmm. is really fun. And then the horses come in, the Super Friends attack. And one of the things I've always loved about the Super Friends, I love about Aquaman, is that these animals are not evil, obviously. They're under the control of a bad guy. So they don't want to hurt the animals. You know, they want to subdue them, but right. They don't want to hurt them because they're not bad guys. So I love that extra little bit of kindness that the superheroes have to kind of use, because it's like, yeah, they're not, you know, we just want to get these animals out of trouble, as opposed to like a villain where you would punch them out. And I like that. As a kid, I enjoyed that little detail because I liked my heroes being friends to animals.
So what did you think about on page 15? Thanks for the assist, Aquaman. You know, and then she's like, I could have easily handled them if they were four ordinary cougars.
And he says, you managed to beat three, leaving one for me. I do appreciate that she gave him the credit for the assist. I love, love, love the way Ramona draws the one cougar, and he's snarling as she's blasting it up. Oh, it's so well drawn, so simple, but so well drawn that one of them is kind of off to the side. And then the other one is like, nah, it's really beautifully rendered.
I mean, she is a wonderful artist. I mean,
Yeah, it's just really, really gorgeous stuff. It's, again, so simple, but mm-hmm. man, just so effective. And just, again, another little detail. Superman shoves the birds into his cape, which I like that too. And he's carrying them around in a bag. It's great. It's just really cool to be able to have a cape that nobody can escape from. So then back at the Menagerie Man's headquarters, we see that Gleek has got the loot. But, of course, we don't wonder, well, who grabbed him? Because there was that silhouetted panel where he was grabbed by somebody. And
right.
We see that the diamonds are, in fact, they are made of ice. They are not really diamonds. And then they turn into the fog. And we see, of course, that it's Xan and Jaina from the whole time. So the Menagerie Man falls into this trap. You don't even see him get punched or anything by the Super Friends. Like, they just grab him and they're like, all right, that's it. We're done.
Yeah, it's done. What's going to happen to all the animals that have superpowers and, you know.
I don't know. Yeah, they don't say that. I guess they probably got returned to the Gotham Zoo or something. Well, then they bust out. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
They have to, Professor Nichols or like de-superpower them or something. I don't know. And then back at the Hall of Justice, I like the little detail where Gleek has pilfered something from all of the super friends, save Aquaman because he doesn't have anything to pilfer. And they're like, oh, geez, we have to teach him to unlearn this trick. And again, I love the final panel of how annoyed Xan and Jaina look, the way that Ramona Freyden draws them. They just have this kind of like, I've had that, made that face to our dog Pippa the last 3 months. It's great, great little detail.
Well, and I like the little detail on that same page. If you're looking, you know, you're looking at the characters from behind, and I love that, you know, Wonder Woman's hair isn't perfect. It's, you know, just a little bit off. It's just a little bit, you know, it's perfect.
Yeah, it's she really, again, Ramona really threw in those details, which was extra effort and always appreciated because it just gives the whole thing just an extra little bit of, not reality because this is the Super Friends, but just, it does feel more real and that, her hair is not just one piece. Mm-hmm. Like you would see on the Super Friends, of course, her hair was the same every time because that's how they had to animate it.
Right.
But Ramona could do it. It's really, really nice. So overall, what do you think of this as a story? You think this is, you know.
For a Super Friends book, granted, you're not going to get, I'm trying not to get logic last because I'm like, okay, this is written for younger kids.
Right.
It's, you know, for a younger kid comic, it hits the beats. It's, you know, yes, it's got some danger, but it's not high level danger. It's, you know, it's a good comic for kids. The art in it is great. It's clear, you know, has those extra details we were talking about. All of your characters are in there. So if you have a kid that likes a particular character, their guy's going to be in there.
Yeah. I mean, the Menagerie Man, that's one of the things we always do every episode is the villain roundup about whether the villain would be useful to the DC universe outside of the Super Friends. Menagerie Man never appeared outside of the Super Friends, because he's just too weak a villain. He's just his plans are foiled too easily. His plots are just not that well thought out. But within, as a villain for the Super Friends, he works. As who do you think was the best friend? What do you think? What character came off you think the best?
I would say honestly, Aquaman did.
Okay, I like where this is going. Explain.
Yeah, because you think about it. You've got the training, and when you are showing kids how to do something, he's like, hey, this is, you know, this is where you did right. This is where, you know, he starts off, he does the sandwich thing, you know, where you start off with something good, and then you give some constructive feedback, and then you follow up with something good, and he makes sure that they're safe. And then he's like, you know, thanks for helping me. And he's a good friend in this. He helps Wonder Woman, and he is also aware of, well, you know, because these are here, there's not a whole lot I can do, but I'm going to do what I can in this episode. So go Aquaman in this episode.
All right. I'll go with that. I was leaning towards Batman just because he figures out that it's the minute. I mean, everybody is pretty equal in this issue. But yeah, I like Aquaman does get that little solo bit with the Wonder Twins. So yeah, let's go with Aquaman. He gets to train the Wonder Twins on how to deal with sharks and stuff, which is quite valuable.
And I mean, you know, here's the thing, and this is the reason you and I have talked about this before. Why was Wonder Woman so important, the movie? It's the fact that, you know, when Wonder Woman goes to cross no man's land, Steve's like, okay, she's got this. I'm following her. I don't care who she is or, you know, or anything else. I care what she can do and what she's capable of. And this is kind of Aquaman doing that. Hey, I know what you've got. Let me help you what I can do.
Okay.
You're in charge here. So I like that.
Yeah. Okay. I like what you're laying down here, Cindy. overall, it's a fine issue. It's not one of their best.
Oh, yeah.
The Menagerie Man is just the Menagerie Man. I thought the Xan and Jaina did a great job. I like that she's able to changes into this gorilla. Enelson Bridwell is working on sort of expanding her powers a bit, which I like. Separate from this issue of the Super Friends. Now, I know you were a librarian for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And do you guys have comic books in your library?
Oh, yeah. That was something that I actually, they had some graphic novels there that were, you know, of course, bound and stuff and issues. But I actually started getting comic books in. I don't know if they have kept up with that since I've left that position. But I had monthly comic books that came in that the kids could check out as well.
Okay. So. The reason I bring that up is when I was a kid, they didn't have and going to the library all the time, they didn't have comic books. Like, that just was not a thing. But I always wondered why DC didn't create like a library edition of the Super Friends and get them into libraries, because this is ideal for little kids to learn how to read. Because the
story, actually, though, the thing about it is, and I think this is what happened, is DC actually had a reading program that they were focused in that was put into the elementary schools that was Super Friends based.
They did?
Yes. I mean, Chris and I both took part in that, and here in Harrison County, in little Harrison County, we had a Super Friends reading program, and what? It was our books that we read.
What was it? Well, I'm completely unfamiliar with this. What was
it? It came out in probably 79 to 83. I'm talking to Chris while he's down the hall, but it was like
they were older, but they were still there when we got there.
Yeah,
I think they're from the 70s.
Okay, so late 70s, and I want to say it was
Super A, Super B.
Oh,
those things. Okay.
Yes.
All right, yeah.
Yes. So, you know, and I think that's where that focus was, because those were out there, and Chris and I had those, and I'd love to find a set of them, because I remember, you know, I remember going through them, and he and I were at two different elementary schools, so it must have been a countywide thing, not just a school thing.
Okay. I am familiar with the Super A, Super B thing. We didn't have those in school, but I always just felt like both Marvel and DC had their one book that was really devoted to younger readers, Super Friends and Spidey Super Stories. And I always just thought, why not try and get them where – I know that they were put on the same racks along with all the other comic books. But I always just thought, geez, it's a shame that you couldn't get these in front of even younger kids to teach them how to, you know, get started on reading, because obviously that's what they were built for. They were built for younger kids.
Right. And see, now they have board books, and I got a bunch of board books at the library, and kids were like, you know, the dad, especially, I'll be honest, the dads would come in with their littles, and, you know, and these would be guys that I had seen when they were in high school, and now they have little kids, and I'd be like, hey, you still like Batman? And they'd be like, yeah. I'm like, look, show this to your baby.
There's so much great stuff now. Oh, man, I would have killed for all that stuff when I was a kid. So okay, well, that's Super Friends number 19, The Mystery of the Missing Monkey. Again, any issue featuring a Menagerie Man, it's only gonna go so far, because it's a Menagerie Man. But still, it's still overall a fun issue, beautifully drawn, of course, by Ramona Fraiden and Bob Smith. So overall, a fun story. So, Cindy, thank you so much for coming by.
You're very welcome.
Okay, everybody, we are going to take a break. We're going to play some podcast promos. And when I come back, we are going to do another segment of For All Merch Kind, but not just with Chris Franklin. Cindy's going to stick around in the Hall of Justice, and we're going to be talking about a very beloved piece of Super Friends merch. So stay tuned, everybody.
To a child who doesn't read, the world is a closed book. Drifting, dropping back. Dropping out. That's why a nationwide organization named RIF, Reading is Fundamental, was formed. To help get books into the hands of children who have no books of their own. A book a child can pick out himself. For keeps. A book that really belongs to him and makes him want to read. It works. There are more than 150 local RIF programs starting up in communities like yours. They're proving that once you start a child reading, there's no stopping him. If America is to grow up thinking, reading is fundamental. To find out how you can help, write to RIF Incorporated, Smithsonian Institution, Washington, D.C.
And we're back with another installment of For All Merch Kind. And as promised, we have not only Chris Franklin with us. Hi, Chris.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Cindy is sticking around as well. Hi, Cindy.
Hey.
Hey, Rob, I just got to say, no offense to Derek William Crabb, who I love, but your guests are getting much better looking.
I hope so.
I wonder what next month's guest will say about that. We'll find out. So, yeah, we're here to talk about another beloved piece of Super Friends merchandise, namely the Super Friends lunchbox.
Yes.
Which so many kids had. I had it. Did you guys both have this when you were growing up?
I did.
I didn't.
No, you didn't. This was my first lunchbox. This was the lunchbox that it must have either been in production until 1980 or it was old store stock in 1980. But yeah, this was my first lunchbox that I took with me to kindergarten.
Wow. I love metal lunchboxes because, you know, you could really clock a kid upside the head with one of them if they got out of hand. Which
Right. And that's why they quit making metal lunchboxes.
Exactly.
And the last one made, oddly enough, was Rambo. That was the last metal lunchbox.
Noted kids character Rambo.
Yeah.
Cindy, did you have other lunchboxes growing up?
I had the strawberry shortcake lunchbox. And yeah, and luckily Chris has actually replaced that same lunchbox because after I got finished with it, my dad took it to the garage and used it to have like nails and screws and all that kind of stuff in. So it got destroyed.
That's a very unstrawberry shortcake like use of a lunchbox.
Yeah, you know.
I had a couple. I had the Super Friends one. I had a Spider-Man one. I had a Star Wars one. That's for damn sure. I know there was a Hulk one. I know you guys have a Hulk one too, right?
Yes.
We recently picked up a Hulk one. I still have my childhood Super Friends lunchbox. But one side of it, the Batgirl side, which we'll get into, is rusted all to hell. So, Cindy, we were at our local comic book shop in Lexington, Kentucky Heroes Realm. And they had the Super Friends lunchbox in pretty good shape and the Hulk lunchbox.
Yes.
So we just bought.
And it was hilarious because we were, you know, he's like, oh, you know, or I think they were just sitting there. I'm like, hey, is that what I think it is? And one was 28 and one was 30.
Yeah.
And I forget which one was which. And I'm like, oh, and I'm like, yoink. And I just carried him up to the counter. And yeah. Chris just looked at me like, what just happened?
Like, I'm not complaining. But, yeah, Steve got him out behind the counter. And yeah. He just, like, walked him up to the register. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
But, see, that way, that one is mine.
Oh, the new Super Friends one is yours?
Yeah, that's mine.
Okay, it's your. Oh, it's mine. Okay.
It's mine.
Now, when you guys go lunchbox hunting, where are you on the completeness of it? Because, of course, if you go on eBay and you look up lunchboxes, so often the thermos is missing. It's a separate.
Yes.
Now you, I'm guessing you can, you know, find the thermos by its own and then piece them together. But do you decide on a case-by-case basis, I want this one enough that I can live without the thermos, or are you kind of a completist?
Well, the Hulk one didn't have neither one of these from Heroes Realm had the thermos.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
So if the box is in good shape, we'll get it because you can pick up, you know, maybe you'll pick up the thermos later.
Yeah.
I mean, we just kind of like having the lunch boxes for as long as the graphics are good.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't care if there's a little dings, a little rust around the edge or.
And it's one of those cases. I mean, we don't go for the purpose of finding lunch boxes. It's one of those cases that if we happen across them and it's a character we like for a reasonable price, we're like, oh. Okay, we only have a few. We have, what, 8 or 9?
Yeah, they're all here in our dining room over top of our
– Yeah, we actually have them. Yeah, we actually have them in our kitchen.
Yeah,
and, kitchen, you know, yeah. And they're on top of our china cabinet kind of like as decor.
So. Yeah, yeah.
So. What are the other ones?
We have strawberry shortcake.
Yeah, and we have two of those. I just picked up a second one because one side was rusted. How does that – I guess where it lays down.
Yeah, and one side was dented in pretty bad on the
Yeah,
other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we've got the my other two childhood metal lunchboxes, the Superpowers lunchbox,
mm-hmm.
Which I need to get another one of those because one side of it's a little stuffed,
right.
and a Masters of the Universe He-Man lunchbox.
Mm-hmm.
That was my other childhood one, and then we've got the Superman the movie, of course.
We have two of those,
and actually the Super Friends I had to pick. I remember that. I had to pick between Super Friends and Superman the movie when I picked my lunchbox when I was going to kindergarten.
Mm. Sophie's choice.
And it was so, yes, it was. It was so hard. But ultimately, I'm like, well, this lunchbox has everyone on it.
Right.
It's got, you know, it's got Batman on it. So that's what, you know, it's got, you know, as much as I love Superman the movie. Now, today, I probably would have picked the Superman the movie lunchbox.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh,
back
okay.
then, I picked that. But we've also got a Marvel lunchbox that's Spider-Man and Hulk on one side and Captain America on the other.
Mm.
That's really cool. And the Captain America is like a redraw of a Steranko Captain America. So that's cool. And there's a Disney one we've got,
mm-hmm.
That's a Disney World lunchbox. And we've got a few plastic ones too,
yeah.
But the metal ones are the ones that are out on display. So yeah,
okay.
we've run out of room now actually. So if we get more, I don't know what we're going to do.
It's going to have to be really cool to bring home, but I could not pass up the Hulk and the Super Friends lunchbox because let's be honest about this lunchbox. You look at it. Who are your central characters?
Yep. This is something that I did not realize. It hit me like about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And I was looking at it and I'm like, oh my God, this is a girl's lunchbox. Because Wonder Woman's front and center. Batgirl's front and center on the other side. Catwoman's on front and center on one end. And Supergirl is on the other, on the sides.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's a girl's, and it's got the magenta around the edge.
It's that purpley pink.
I mean, I know this is awful in gender politics of today. It's awful. But in 1980, if some kid figured out you had a girl's lunchbox,
they'd have pounded you.
You would be beaten with it. You would be beaten with it.
Yeah, your life's over at that point.
Your life's over. Yep. So luckily, no kids discerned that. You know, it had enough, you know, machismo in the other super friends and villains to cover that. But yeah, it's, Aladdin Industries from Nashville, Tennessee, they were definitely leaning into the female, the girl power. Plus, this came out when Wonder Woman TV show was on.
Yeah.
So 1976. So, yeah, so definitely. But
Can I admit here on the show that I did not notice that until you just pointed it out? Didn't really. As you're talking about it, I'm like, wait, what's he talking about? Then I look and I go, yeah, the women characters, except for the one side where Aquaman is the center. Yep. The women characters are basically the front and center on this lunchbox. So, Well, okay.
There
then.
You go. I'm sorry, Rob. I just changed the course of your childhood. I'm sorry.
Something like that. Well, it probably couldn't have been any worse. So it's fine. but no, yes. Okay. Let's talk about this lunch. Oh, I will say, lunchbox wise, the first thing I ever bought, the first gift I ever bought my fiance Kelly is a lunchbox.
Oh.
She showed me photos from her family album, and there was a photo of her as a little kid with her little pigtails holding her Charlie's Angels lunchbox. And she's looking very happy. And though, like that night, I went on eBay and found it and bought it for her. And that was the first present I ever bought her. It was like a month into our relationship. So
that is so sweet.
It's sitting here on the shelf to my left as I'm recording this. So yeah.
Is it one of the vinyl ones or is it a metal one?
Oh, it's metal.
Oh, it's metal. Okay.
Yeah. Yep,
I know they made a lot of the girl centric lunchboxes were vinyl, like the Wonder Woman specific ones vinyl from back then. So for whatever reason, they thought. A lot of times they marketed vinyl lunchboxes to girls for some reason, but it's cool that it's metal.
Maybe they think, oh, well, girls aren't going to want to clock somebody in the head. Guess what?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
they haven't met you.
Yeah. But from my experience, that's very wrong. So, okay.
I've only hit you once or twice, hush.
So let's. Okay. I'm hoping we can go through this whole show without you hitting Chris. This is my show.
She's armed with a lunchbox, so let's not do that.
Yeah, let's not do that. So, all right, let's talk about this this lunchbox. As Chris talked about, it's got Wonder Woman in the center and surrounded by Superman, Batman, and Robin. I'm not going to mention, although I just am doing it right now, that Aquaman belongs on here too as the front panel because it's a Super Friends lunchbox. But okay. Now, Chris, this artwork, this is probably all Murphy Anderson, right? Would that be your estimation?
Yeah, I mean, this is the Batman and Robin were probably, like, you know, originally Carmine Infantino did the pencils and Anderson did the inks. But this has a very Murphy Anderson feel to it. I don't know if Murphy Anderson did the art, but somebody was definitely channeling Murphy Anderson, even on the non-Murphy Anderson poses on this lunchbox, I feel like.
It's really got that look to me. As you said, maybe Infantino did like the butt, you know, just got quick poses and then Murphy sort of finished it, or somebody was copying it influencing on the style. So then on the back, you've got Batgirl and Flash and Green Arrow, which is, again, kind of unusual choices. It's not like Green Arrow was on the Super Friends, except for that one episode. And then you've got the side panel, or kind of is the bottom, with Aquaman, the classic stock art pose. You've got a Gil Kane Green Lantern. You've got Hawkman, who never showed up on the cartoon ever until Challenge of the Super Friends. Right. And then you've got Supergirl, Batman and Robin. And then you've got the villains panel, which is Joker, the Carmine Infantino Joker, Catwoman, and Riddler. So, okay, Cindy, is there any character that you wished was on here that's not on here? Or do you feel like this is a good sampling of the DC universe at the time?
For your typical, you know, what kids would know and everything else, I think these are the ones that I would have picked two as far, and also as far, I'm sorry, also as far as being the bright colors, because that's what you're after. You know, you don't want any of the muted colors or, you know, anything like that. These are your attention grabbing characters. So,
yeah. I think, other than in 76, it would have been, you know, Wendy and Marvin for a Super Friends lunchbox. But as far as the actual DC characters, I think this covers pretty much the, you know, the A B squad of DC at the time. And it's funny because, you know, Supergirl and Batgirl were never, ever on any iteration of the Super Friends cartoon at all.
Which makes no sense to me at all.
Yeah, and neither was Catwoman. No. She was never on there either. I mean, Joker and Penguin made it into the superpowers era eventually, but I will say this: for years, I was flummoxed by at the top of the lunchbox, you have the Penguin in that classic Carmine Infantino Murphy Anderson pose from those posters in the '60s, and then you have Kitten underneath the handle. And,
oh, is that who's there? Because I can't see it from the pictures.
Yeah, Kitten. It's Kitten from the. Now I know from Super Friends number one, the sidekick of Cheetah. So Cheetah's not on here, but Kitten is. So
that would be, no, yeah, that's true. It should be Cheetah.
It should be the Cheetah, yeah. And I thought for years that was just a goof that somebody at Aladdin didn't know who the heck Cheetah was, and they called her Kitten. But no, because I didn't have Super Friends number one until I got that trade paperback years later, you know, they reprinted them the first issue or so. So, yeah, I always wondered, well, who the somebody, this is another case of a company not knowing what they're doing. But with Kitten in there, I have to wonder, was E. Nelson Bridwell involved in this lunchbox?
Well, and why on earth do Batman and Robin get to be on there twice?
Because they're Batman and Robin, damn it.
That's Batman and Robin. Yeah.
Well,
Batman and Robin were DC. I mean, then as of now, Batman, even in the 70s, was still the merchandising king. He got most of the Mego line. He got most of the AHI and all that stuff. So
he had his own cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, and you have to appreciate, you know, Batman and Robin are here on the side next to Wonder Woman. And then Batgirl has her own panel. So again, going back to this is a girl's lunchbox.
Right. Yeah. So, and it is kind of weird, though, that Batman and Robin are. Why didn't they put Supergirl in the middle on the back and then put Batman and Robin with Batgirl?
Yeah.
Why? It's kind of weird that they're hanging out with Supergirl. I mean, there's like very little connective tissue between those characters. So.
They all have yellow accents?
I guess maybe. I don't know. And I love that the Green Arrow pose is also the Gil Kane Green Lantern pose.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I just love how they reuse the same pose twice on the lunchbox. So.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's now you said you don't have the thermos, right?
I do. No.
Have the thermos.
Not mine.
I have original thermos. Here, I'll open the lunchbox.
Because on the picture you can see Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. Who else is on the thermos on the other side of it?
The other side is Batgirl and the Flash.
Wow, boy, they really didn't like Aquaman on this thing.
No, they didn't. They lifted the same image from a Batgirl and the Flash from the back, and the four Super Friends they used on the front.
What is Batgirl doing exactly? By the way, what is she's got her arm up, she's got her hand up, she's kind of like what? Like what is
she's
that?
Waving a cab? I don't know what she's doing.
Well, I think what it was is it's like. Maybe she had just thrown a batarang, or there was a batarang in her hand, and they took that out just for
maybe so.
That's what I went with.
Yeah, it's a little her pose. Part of her pose is a little like the first appearance of the $1 million debut of Batgirl, a little bit.
Yes, it is.
But then her arms up in that weird position, and I don't know. The Flash almost looks like a Ross Andrew.
Yeah,
from when he was briefly drawing the Flash, so. Ross Andrew, Mike Esposito. So I don't know. But yeah, it's there's so many like mysteries. This is one of those lunchboxes you can just stare at for days. And there's little things I'm noticing between mine and Cindy's version, my original childhood copy. Me and Cindy noticed this right off the bat. Everything on mine is much more, it has a red cast to it.
Yeah,
like the
it
flesh
does.
Tones are, everybody's got a tan on mine. and I think it was always like that. And Cindy's is more like, true Caucasian flesh color. And then the top of it, I noticed my handle says Aladdin and yours has got like the grooves. So over the years, this thing probably was in production for 4 years or whatever, and they just made minor changes
and
stuff.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Yeah, it is. And hers is, I mean, like we said, if they got a little bit of rust on them, we don't really worry as long as it's not getting into the graphic. And it just, they, you know, they display really nice. And it's funny because lunchboxes are so, I have seen lunchboxes like this lunchbox for a really good price. And like the strawberry shortcake I got you was like $12 or something.
Yeah.
But I have seen completely rusted out lunchboxes with a price tag of $100 on it.
Oh,
like a Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes, I was going to say Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard.
What was that at? One of the
Peddler's
Mall.
Oh, it was one of the Peddler Mall or Flea Market. They, I mean, like you could even like, I mean, it looked like the zombie corpse of John Schneider and Tom Wopat on this lunchbox. I mean, they were just so rusted out that it, you know, it's like, you really want $100 for that? It's liable to disintegrate before I even get it to my car, you know?
Wow. Yeah, that's, I'm imagining, I wonder, I don't know enough about the lunchboxes collector's market. Like, I wonder what, like, the holy grail of lunchboxes is. Like, I know, like, with Mego, you know, like, the removable mask Batman is like the one you want because it's the most impossible one to find. I wonder what lunchbox is like. Oh my God, I've never seen that one. $1,000. There must be one of them that's like.
Well, there's yeah. I've got a book that actually I found a few years back at Half Price Books called mm-hmm. Lunchbox Inside and Out by
really
Jack Mingo and Aaron Barrett. And there's quite a few in here that are just like, you know, that are they've got like. They don't give you a price, but they give you like dollar signs of like how much you can expect
to
pay. And there's like a few Mickey Mouse ones that are very rare. You know, the Star Trek dome lunchbox, the original Star Trek lunchbox from the 60s, that one, which is beautiful. It's got some inconsistencies like Starfleet crew in purple and green shirts. But, you know, there's some of those in there that are just insane. I think the earliest lunchbox made like in the traditional style was a Hopalong Cassidy lunchbox. So the cowboy heroes, Hopalong Cassidy and Roy Rogers kind of instigated the, well, I won't even say modern cause it's not, I guess, I mean, lunchboxes are still a thing, but as far as the metal lunchbox, they kind of started that. And a lot of those go for quite a bit of money. If you guys can find this book out there, it's several years old, but it's a fun book. Full cover.
That sounds fun. That does sound like, I'd like to read something like that. That does sound like a fun book.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Oh, and the original, bringing it back to the network, the original Guy Williams Zorro lunchbox from the Disney series is quite valuable too. So I'd love to have that one.
Yeah. Wow. Very cool. So yeah, it's when I think of lunchboxes, this is the one, this one and Star Wars are the two I think of the most. Cause those are the ones I used the most were these ones. And I have to think like, when did I lose them? Like, why did I bug my parents to get new ones? I guess. Cause it was almost like fashion. You know, you're like, cause I mean, they were durable. I'm sure that the lunchbox that they bought me in 1976 would still be in use 5 years later. But I'm sure I was like every year, I'm like, I gotta get a new one. This is the new thing. It's a status symbol. I gotta get the Star Wars one. Come on. You know?
It's kind of funny because my sister had a Snoopy and Woodstock lunchbox that, you know, somehow ended up with me to just put like toys and stuff in it. And along the way I had different things in it. Right now I've still got like, I got a bunch of color forms pieces in it and I still have it. But the funny thing was, is that I guess I bought a random pack of Star Wars cards at one point and had a sticker and slapped it on the lunchbox. And that sticker has stayed there for years. And little did I know that sticker was of Grand Moff Tarkin. So Peter Cushing, my beloved Peter Cushing, has been on that lunchbox for like 40 years.
That's just such a perfect Chris Franklin story.
Yes, it is.
Well, again, you'll be able to see pictures of this lunchbox on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You just check out the gallery post. So, Chris, Cindy, thank you so much. Chris, of course, thank you for coming back. And Cindy, thanks for sticking around for this segment for All Merch Kind.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us, Rob. It was nice to be on the show again and to be on here with such a lovely co-host.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell people where they can find you here on the website?
We are on the JLU cast where we cover the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited series, and we're getting ready to shortly wrap up the Justice League series, season two, and the end of Justice League before we jump into Justice League Unlimited. So that's exciting. And, of course, we have our Supermates series, which will come back in the fall for the House of Frankenstein. So we're making plans for that now.
All right. Sounds exciting. You guys got to get to Time of Their Lives sometime.
I know.
I think we're going to have to do that one.
We are.
Well, there you go. There's one of them.
I keep suggesting it every stinking year. And he's like, oh, well, we got to do this. And we got to do a hammer. We got to do that.
I didn't mean to bring up something awkward at the end here. If I
No, we'll do it.
That thing's going to be nice.
There's a sneak preview of what one of the shows will be. It's about the time of their lives.
So. Yes. Fantastic. It's a great movie. So, all right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming by. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned. We're going to play some more promos. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
I know it's heartbreaking to have your favorite shows preempted, but look what you're getting instead.
TLUcast brings you Justice League Season 2.
Woo! Back in business.
The Justice League faces their greatest foe.
This is a chance to rid ourselves of the League once and for all.
Darkseid,
Brainiac,
Dr. Destiny,
Lex Luthor,
Amazo,
Vandal Savage,
Eclipso,
The Joker,
Harley Quinn,
The Royal Flush Gang,
The Secret Society of Supervillains,
and themselves?
Dale UCast Season 2, available on iTunes and Apple Podcasts and at firewaterpodcast.com.
Always have to be the hero, don't you? Right back at you.
And we're back with listener feedback, and this is the feedback for the previous episode of For All Mankind, which was episode 18 with my guest Derek William Crabb. And we're going to get right to the comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. First up is Martin Gray, who says, thanks for another great episode of For All Mankind, created from the podcasting legends of the universe. Ramona is great. I'm never not delighted by her work, but Kurt Schaffenberger is one of my top three Superman artists. Ramona Superman is a tad knobbly, where Kurtz is super smooth. So while Super Friends is inarguably Ramona's book, visually, I'm very happy to have this particular guest artist. And yes, that full-page image of Superman wafting over Atlantis is spectacular. As Derek says, it's not a big, bashy image. It's about wonder. I'd like more of that in comics. In regards to Kurt's excellent Robin, happily, this wasn't his only go. Kurt drew Robin in the Bronze Age in Detective Comics' Batman Family. The look of Kurt's Robin was at the mercy of the inker. Bob Smith was a good partner for him. The likes of Frank Chiaramonte and Joe Giella were less appealing. The toy Derek was trying to think of would have fitted the Diving Aquaman art is called a bagatelle. Well, in the UK, anyway, it's bound to be called something different in the US, cheese bump or molehole or whatever. Mad as it is, I'm glad to see Professor Nichols is back. Derek's idea that he's using solidified astral projection is great. And how lovely to get a Tuatara cameo. It's a wonder Ian B. didn't use Tuatara having three eyes to boost the time travel. Atlantis is too far back for my hypnosis and ray combo. But wait. Fun for all merch kind as ever. I'll take the die specs, please. They're more unapologetically superheroic. Thank you, Martin. Cellar Dweller says, it's a rainy Sunday morning, the perfect time to listen to the newest podcast from For All Mankind. When issue 18 came out, I was not a regular reader of Legion of Superheroes, but I knew of their existence, so I was excited to learn that the Time Trapper had a connection to them. I always felt it made Super Friends more legit when they tangled with established DC villains rather than the one-and-done villains that appeared in some issues. As much as it pains me to say, I would think that the Best Friend title would go to Gleek for his capture of Time Trapper and rescue Professor Nichols. I find it interesting that the groupings for this issue matched issue 13, where they battled the Mole Creature. Superman and Aquaman, Wonder Woman and Robin, Batman and the Wonder Twins. Also, this issue is one of the few times the comic had Zan turned into some sort of ice sculpture form. Since the cartoon did that just about weekly, I was waiting to see if the comic would follow suit, but they rarely did that. Well, I accept that when reading comics, you have to suspend belief for certain things. Even as a kid, this issue's story bothered me. Using hypnosis to send people back in time? Really? Even if you go with the theory of astral projection, it would be their astral forms of the heroes, not physical forms. So how could they use their powers physically? There had to be a better way to tell this story. Dr. Ann says, great episode and always great to hear Derek. Yes, I hate Wheelie. Some great stuff to discuss. At first, I did not like Kurt Schaffenberger, thinking him too cartoony. But his style is clean and his layouts are spot on. And his work has a certain charm. He did a large chunk of Supergirl stories after Jim Mooney left, and he's perfect for those books. Hard to believe he was the artist for that Muhammad Ali's team wanted to draw the Superman Ali treasury. The Time Trapper had more secret identities than I can shake a stick at. So in my mind canon, this is someone pretending to be the Time Trapper. How else can Gleek beat him? This makes it feel more like a Scooby story. Someone just needs to unmask this time traveler. Hypnotic time travel is a sort of trope often preceded by some lecture about time being nonlinear, that all time exists at the same time, so we just need to believe when we are. See that Christopher Reeve, Jane Seymour movie, Somewhere in Time. Loving this podcast. Thank you, Anshin. Yes, I still have not gotten around to see Somewhere in Time. Amazing. Rob McCarthy says, it was strange. In San Francisco, you could find the second wave of superpowers, no trouble, except Green Arrow, which was nowhere. And when I say San Francisco, I mean California. Okay. I don't know what to tell you, Rob. I don't know why Green Arrow was so hard to find, but I love that figure. Green Arrow has done well in every toy form. The superpowers toy was great. The Mego toy was great. It's like my favorite Mego. So Green Arrow just works really well in toy form. Little Russell Bourbon says that this is one of those cases where I much prefer the setup to a two-part story than the eventual conclusion. Let's start with the ending. The time trapper captured by Gleek. I'm glad Derek was there to explain away that this must not have been the real time trapper, because I'm sure that's how I thought about it the first time I read this story. Gleek? Of course, it was never really clear what the time trapper's plot was in the first place, so there's that to consider as well. Throw the Wonder Twins back in time to send the Super Friends after them? Went back in three totally random eras to mess up time? You would think he could do all that and more for breakfast. He's the effing time trapper. I didn't mind his Supergirl stories when I came across them, but his lopsided Batman ears always bug me. As Martin Gray pointed out, however, Kurt did a lot of Robin stories in Batman Family Detective after this issue of Super Friends. So perhaps Jaleesh Schwartz liked Kurt's Robin and asked him to do more. There is a notice in the JLA-centric issue of Amazing World of DC Comics number 14, March 1977, which, to my knowledge, was the first place to claim Gotham City was in New Jersey and Metropolis was in Delaware. Perhaps E&B was simply trying to include this tidbit in main DC continuity. Professor Nichols' time-traveling hypnosis was used all over the Silver Age Bat universe. I was never quite sure how it worked either, but it was certainly a DC Silver Age trope. All those stories where Batman and Robin meet Bat Chief of the Indians, reprinted in various Batman family issues, were all due to Professor Nichols and his super hypnotism. Oddly enough, this is not the last appearance of it. The last appearance of it, I am aware, is in an issue of Brave and the Bold, late in the run, 171, where Batman asks his old friend to send him back in time to the Civil War where he can meet Scalp Hunter in a story by Jerry Conway and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name. And lastly, I really like this cover. It's one of my favorite SF covers because it shows symbolically the danger the characters are in, and it features all the members, two things that did not happen very often with this book. Yeah, just like this month, Russell. The administrator says, yes, I was that nerd screaming into my device when Rob asked where Professor Nichols' hypnosis time travel thing came from, as I heard myself crying out, that's like his whole shtick in the Golden and Silver Age Batman tales, LOL. And then when Gleek's tail was mentioned being strangely extra long, I heard myself exclaim, Gleek's elastic tail is like his whole shtick. Finally, I heard myself say to myself, I think stick in this sense is spelled differently, to which Siskoid chimes in, you're looking for shtick, S-H-T-I-C-K. Thank you, Siskoid. Edo Bosnar says, another gripping conclusion to a two-part episode. Kudos yet again to Derek. As to the issue at hand, yeah, I also prefer Frayden's art, but Chaffenberger is a worthy substitute in the Super Friends. As I recall, his art would appear a few more times as the series went on. And yes, Rob, that image of Aquaman is really rather striking. I could definitely see that being used as a stock image. And man, that merch. There are times when I think it would be really cool to have, say, the Wonder Woman frames on my everyday prescription glasses. Lizanne Oswald says, fun story that the monkey beat the time trapper. Well, the crisis reset this so it didn't happen. That's it. To which Martin Gray replied, nah, the crisis has been undone at least twice now. Try not to work that one out. So Gleek still defeated the time trapper. Brian Linton says, hold on a second. Part of the time trapper's plan was to cause the fall of Atlantis, but wasn't Atlantis supposed to fall? Unless it wasn't supposed to fall and did, which means the time trapper's plan actually succeeded despite Superman and Aquaman's intervention. Sorry, I think I need an aspirin. In regards to hypnosis as a means of time travel, I'm reminded of the 1957 movie The Undead, where hypnosis is used to regress young woman into one of her past lives. Her present-day consciousness is able to share her past life's body. Perhaps Professor Nichols' technique works along similar lines? Yes, and for that to work, I know the powers would have to regress with their consciousness, though they'd have needed time to recreate their present-day costumes in the past. That's the best I've got. Thanks for another spectacular episode. Yeah, boy, Brian, The Undead, that's a rough movie. If you're using that as your baseline to explain your plot, you're probably in bad shape. Ted Gilfington says, awesome episode. I read this story when I was a 10-year-old living in Michigan. I was especially pleased to see the scenes with young Tom Edison in Michigan. And has been mentioned above, the Professor Nichols plot device of hypnotic time travel was used in many Batman stories before and after this issue. I never tried it myself until after I saw the film Somewhere in Time. Well, there it is again. And I became obsessed for years with trying to sit, self-hypnotize myself through time. Boy, did that turn out badly. Anywho, I look forward to a future episode of both For All Mankind and Somewhere in Time Movie Minute. You know, if Ange ever wants to become a podcaster full-time, that might be a good idea. Chris Franklin, of course, who you just heard on this episode, says, late to the game, but I really enjoyed this continued discussion of this story. I love Kurt Schaffenberger, except his lumpy Batman. His Batman is a very unique take, and I just don't care for it. He drew quite a bit of World's Finest around this time as well, but I did enjoy his Robin solo tales. I think Schaffenberger may be one of the most consistent comic artists of any era. His characters look the same from every angle, like he was working in animation. You know, boy, Chris, now that you say that, that's a really interesting observation. I think that's spot on. I think that's part of the reason I like it so much, and maybe I didn't as a kid, is that, yeah, they look – they are like – they're almost like model sheets in some way. And you actually, Chris, gets into that very point here. Speaking of the DC style guide, Schaff did some artwork for the guide, one of the few artists, aside from JLGL, PBHN, and George Perez for the Titans, to make it into the 82-era guides. His segment was labeled Super Friends Art, appropriately enough, but I recall first seeing some of the art on the Superpowers newsletter I got by sending in proof of purchase from the action figures. I only got one issue, though. I still have a dogged copy of it, sans cover. I don't even remember the cover. It's been gone for so long. But I still recall that Superman splash and the panels with him and Aquaman, and, of course, Schaff's Robin. Great show, guys. Yeah, thanks, Chris. Again, yeah, that is something about Schaffenberger. It's the way you can sort of, yeah, you, like his figures are perfect no matter what angle you look at it. Yeah, it does have that kind of classically almost stock art feel to it. And yeah, like you mentioned, he was one of the few artists to appear in the style guide outside of JLGL. So that makes sense. Sean M. Meyer says, another great episode covering a good issue. One great thing about this issue is that it reminded me of issue 789, where the heroes divided into teams to dismantle trap set for them. I love that storytelling device so much. In this story, Zan turns into a tornado, which I found rather odd. Is a tornado really some form of water? I guess I'll have to study up on all the scientific accuracies of tornadoes by watching Twister. Although I love Ramona Freyden's artwork, I think Schaffenberger's style is also perfect for Super Friends. I think he does a great job not only on Robin, he draws Robin's collar so much more open than other artists, but on Wonder Woman's tiara, pages 8 and 11, where you can see the backside of the top of her tiara, especially on Aquaman's hair, as it moves from side to side when he's in the water. I agree with Cellar Dweller and 12,457,158 other For All Mankind listeners that Gleek is the super friend of the issue. He is the hero who caught the time trapper and saved the day. Boston Moss follows up with that. It says, another fun episode. That was a surprise that Gleek wasn't the super friend this time around. All right, everybody. It was Gleek. I apologize. I just naturally don't think to give it to Gleek. I made a horrible mistake. We'll delete that episode from the feed. I'm sorry, everybody. Yes, Gleek should have been the best friend in that episode. I apologize. And then finally, Tom Perrain provides a link to the an eBay auction of the Batman Nasta sunglasses along with Superman Nasta sunglasses. Of course, it makes sense that they did Superman glasses, but I didn't know that. I never saw them before. So, yeah, that's really, really cool that you could buy both of them. I guess they never did Aquaman ones, unfortunately. But, yeah, thank you very much, Tom. That was fun to look at and see that they had all three of those sunglasses you could have bought at the time. So, that's going to do it for the feedback. Thanks, everybody, for sending in the comments. I really do appreciate it. As I mentioned, For All Mankind gets a ton of feedback, and I really do appreciate it. Of course, if you want to leave feedback, go to the website, findwaterpodcast.com. So that's going to do it for this episode of For All Mankind. Big thanks to Cindy Franklin for coming by and for Chris for stopping by for another segment of For All Mankind. I really do appreciate it. Of course, all the back episodes are on our show, on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. We're always talking super friends over on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. And then finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Chuck Dill, Stanford M. Brown, Gord Tolton, and David S. Gutierrez for their support over on Patreon. Thank you very much. So that is going to do it. Thanks for listening to For All Mankind. Join us next episode when we will look at Super Friends number 20, Revenge of the Leafy Monsters. We'll be right back.
An FWTV podcast.